So today I'm joined on Leeds Voices by live music event promoter Stuart Galbraith. Stuart is a legend of the live music industry. Since starting out promoting the likes of The Clash, Simple Minds and U2 at the university in the 1980s, he's gone on to become one of the most successful and respected pioneers in the live industry. Stuart is founder of Kilimanjaro Live, the company behind major tours and events, putting on shows like Ed Sheeran and festivals such as Sonosphere. He received the Lifetime Achievement Award at the Live Awards 2025 as a key player in the growth of UK live music over the last four decades. So how's that sound to you, Stuart? Was that a pretty accurate summary?
Yeah, sounds old. that's a good couple of paragraphs. That sums it up.
Yeah, it's quite impressive as well. All the things you've done since you were at Leeds. How is it being back on campus? Have you been back since the 80s?
I haven't been on the campus for probably a good two decades. So I'm looking forward to having a wander around this afternoon.
Yeah. So
I come to Leeds quite regularly because we do shows here on a variety of tours with different venues, but haven't been on campus for some time.
And I want to just, obviously you mentioned shows. When you were at Leeds, I mentioned there in the intro that you were a key player in the promotion of bands that were here. And I know a lot of alumni will remember those bands and those experiences. So jumping back to your time at Leeds, what was it that brought you here in the first place? Was it the music scene or what was it?
No, it wasn't. I came here to study zoology, biophysics, genetics, microbiology, and then discovered that there were lots of gigs going on in Leeds from the very first week that I arrived, and that's kind of turned my head from the very first week.
Okay. Have you always had that interest in music?
No, not really. Prior to coming, I grew up in Ipswich, went to school in Ipswich. I perhaps went to just two or three shows there. But the proliferation and the volume of shows that were in Leeds was far in excess of what I'd had the opportunity to see in Leeds, in Ipswich.
And how soon did you get involved then? Was it sort of Freshers Week?
Freshers Week, signed up to Ents, became a stage crew member, spent a year unloading trucks, then became stage manager, and then the third year became the Entsec.
Ah, yes, okay. It's funny, we actually found in the archives, I'll show you this here, a little newspaper clipping.
That's right. Well, Ents, this is about a company called Ents Tech. So Ents Tech was a tech division of Ents where we had PA lights, etc. We were out trying to make a return upon that to help subsidize shows. Absolutely. It also helped me going forward because I learned how to mix sound. I learned a lot about lighting, and that's certainly all stood me in good stead ever since.
Yeah, yeah. And did you find that you loved it? Did you know that was what you wanted to do quite quickly? Or
Yes, it was. It certainly led to a crossroads and some career decisions, whether to carry on in the sciences or whether to literally run away with a rock and roll band. Mm-hmm. I chose the latter, but had an insurance policy of being able to come back and finish my degree. Because I didn't graduate. I did 2 years out of my 3 years, but had a space here to come back to, which is what my promise to my parents was, but I never fulfilled the promise.
Yes, and I'm sure a lot of people are glad that you didn't, because of what you've gone on to do. Now, when you were at Leeds, some of the bands that we mentioned in that intro, the likes of U2, Simple Minds, The Clash, thinking back to those experiences, what were the most memorable ones for you? Do you remember any in particular?
I mean, that was during the period. I didn't necessarily book all of those because the Entsec prior to me was a good friend still called Dave Goodman. And prior to him was a chap called Andy Kershaw. And Andy went on to become radio on DJ or a media presenter. And so the Clash, Bob Marley, U2, Simple Minds. I think we did the first ever show in the UK with ZZ Top. And then thinking back, Kid Creole and the Coconuts, Robert Plant, Quiet Riot, all sorts of variety. Echo and the Bunnymen.
That's it. Yeah, it's a heck of a list, isn't it? Were there any? Obviously, it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because as students, you are all inexperienced in a way because you're new to it. Were there any particular challenges or things that happened that you recall?
Well, it was different. It was different in that time in so much that the Leeds University Refectory was really the main venue for the entire Leeds and Bradford conurbation. First Direct Arena wasn't there. Town and Country Club, which is now latterly the Academy, wasn't there. Bradford St. George's Hall was closed because it had a fire a couple of years before. Bradford Live wasn't there, which is where I'm going tonight with the Gorillaz. And so if you wanted to play to what at the time was the 2 to 3 million people that lived in West Yorkshire, you had to play at Leeds University Refectory. There was the Queen's Hall, which was a car park by the station, an indoor car park by the station that took some big rock shows on an occasional basis. But Leeds had a long history of being the destination location. And back in the 80s and the 90s, there wasn't the network of venues that we now have. And also the scale of productions was much, much smaller. So it's we were a small student union venue that was boxing above its weight for sure.
In terms of the process of how you book those big bands, were they coming to you or were you?
Well, again, in that period, the university circuit was a very defined way of not only bands playing touring, but it was also a predetermined route or a very recognized route on a way from student life into live music. And being an NSEC was not a rite of passage, but certainly if you were an NSEC at a strong university, you had a good chance of being able to go into the music industry for a career. Mm-hmm. And if you look across the industry now, a broad basis, some of the elder members of our industry still are from that route. So Harvey Goldsmith, I think, was at Brighton or Exeter. He studied pharmacology. John Giddings, who is until this day U2's agent, was a student union rep. Steve Homer at AEG, who runs AEG Live. Rob Ballantyne at SJM Concerts. Mm-hmm. We were all social secs because the student union network was a recognised way of touring. It preceded the Academy Group, preceded small theatres, etc.
Okay, that makes sense. I'm interested when you're putting on these shows, do you still get a chance to kind of enjoy the gigs as well, or are you too busy and stressed organising everything?
No. If I'm stressed at a show, it means that my staff aren't, I try not to be stressed at shows. There are plenty of other people to do that and take care of that now. But it would be a lie to say that we enjoy everything that we promote from an artistic appreciation, because we promote such a wide variety. But what we do see is we see the appreciation of the audience, and we can absolutely see the appeal, even if it doesn't necessarily personally appeal to us. Mm-hmm. And for me, the particular satisfaction now is obviously seeing the process of taking small artists or newly discovered artists, and also staff and promoters within the office who work with those artists and join them on that journey from clubs all the way through to stadiums.
Are there any in particular now that you really have seen go from small to the biggest stadiums in the world, kind of thing, that have worked with you from the start?
Yes. Stereophonics is a good example. We play multiple stadiums with Stereophonics. First show I did with them was at Cardiff University Great Hall to 1,200 people. Ed Sheeran, we promote at stadium level. And we've promoted or been involved in just about every show that Ed's done in the UK, all the way from Hoxton Bar and Grill or the Scala in London, which was 700 people, 500 people.
And in terms of when you left Leeds, you went straight on to MCP, as you mentioned, straight into that job. What did you take away from Leeds that was the most valuable thing you took away from here to go into the working world?
Well, I think... Well, first of all, I joined MCP because I had worked with MCP at the refectory. They had brought us several shows that we co-promoted. I enjoyed the way they worked. There was a particular person there called Tim Parsons who offered me a job. He had seen that we were good at what we could do, and also. I learned a huge amount from working shows, working with people, working on a multifaceted team. When you put a show on, it's not just on the day of the show. It's about, are we booking the right show? Gaining consensus from your peer group. Is this a strong band? Should we book it? Is this a good price? What ticket price should it be? How are we going to market it? All of which adds into then the day of the show itself. And then the day of the show itself is, well, there's the technical aspect of it. How do you load it in? What time has it got to start? Are we going to be ready on time? How many staff do we need? What are the particular instances or pieces of that show that make it easy or difficult that day? Then there's the stewarding, the crowd behavior, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's a huge... jigsaw that you then need to map together. And so I learned how to do that certainly here at Leeds. And then taking that jigsaw and placing it into different place settings around the country and at different scale. And the jigsaw changes magnificently when you get to a larger scale. So.
Yeah, that's a lot of things to kind of juggle, isn't it? Is there an element of... when you're picking up new bands and working, choosing who to work with, is it a bit of a almost a gamble?
Absolutely is, and you learn that lesson very, very quickly, because within live music, being a promoter is the only person in the entire equation that has a risk profile. If you sell 10 tickets. Or whether you sell 10,000 tickets on an expectation of selling 5,000, you're the only person that loses money. You're the only entity that loses money. Everybody else gets paid. Stage crew, the band, the venue, the marketing company, the ticketing company, the caterers, everyone that unloads the trucks. Everybody gets paid. You're the banker. If you haven't made your judgment right, then you're the only one that loses the money.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. And just sort of running on from that, what makes a good promoter then in your eyes? What do you need to be able to do?
I think first of all, you need to have good ears. You need to be able to spot talent or employ people and put a team together that has even better ears, which is certainly what we have at Kilimanjaro. We have some great producers and promoters who know what is of appeal and what is good. And then be very organized. You said, what did I learn from Leeds? I think my key learning was you're not going to achieve anything unless you work really hard. And I don't mean... I mean both in terms of physically and timing wise, but also smart. And I guess this is true of any any career or any profession, which is that you get out from it what you put in. Mm-hmm. And if you don't really have that total commitment, then you'll potentially be reasonably successful. But if you really want to excel, then you have to put the 10,000 hours in.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I mean, when I look at your back catalogue now, you can tell you've put at least 10,000 hours in across your roles at MCP, SFX, Live Nation, Kilimanjaro Live. You've had Monsters of Rock Festival, Download Festival, Wireless, Live 8, Red Hot Chili Peppers at Hyde Park, Oasis at Nebworth. Is there one that, if you look back on your career, is there one sort of event or gig that you've done that stands out as your favourite or the thing you're kind of proudest of?
No, I think you've listed a lot there. 250,000 tickets with Oasis at Nebworth, 250,000 tickets with Chili Peppers in Hyde Park, Live Aid, obviously, huge moment. Live Aid, we were also involved in the very first one in 1985, just after I'd left Leeds, in fact. But I think the thing that gives me the most pride now is just the overall breadth of what we are. So because Kilimanjaro is part of a wider group now called KMJ, and KMJ last year, we employ around about 160 people. We sold, or were involved in the sale of nearly 5 million tickets last year, predominantly in the UK, but not exclusively. But it's across a wide range of products, and we don't just promote music, we produce now. We do a huge amount of spoken word, anything from Nigella Lawson through to President Barack Obama. We do theatre. We're a partner in a show on Broadway, another show on the West End called Hadestown. We have currently 3 theatrical productions on the road in the UK. We have a festival in Scotland. We have a ticketing company. We have an exhibition arm. And so it's about being diverse and applying the lessons that you learn in one sector to another, and seeing and taking the opportunities.
When you first set up Kilimanjaro Live, firstly, where did the name come from?
Couldn't think of anything else to call it, and I just climbed it, so that was it.
That's it. You climbed Kilimanjaro?
Yes, I did.
Oh, great. Was that in aid of charity or
no? It was just purely and simply, I'd left Live Nation. I had garden leave. I wasn't able to work. And so that year I did as much as I possibly could and skied and climbed as much as I could everywhere in the world. Oh,
great year.
It was.
And those early days, how stressful was it? And how close did it get to sort of going wrong?
We started off with me and an assistant working out of a borrowed cupboard, literally, a friend's office. We grew with the help of a company called AEG. We were a joint venture with a multinational company called AEG, who had just opened the O2 Arena, which was 2008. That partnership worked really well. It was a good symbiotic relationship. They wanted shows at the O2. We wanted to develop a company. We then took the company private, but not just at Kilimanjaro, but also previously at MCP. If you're a business owner, the reality is that you not only put yourself on the line, but you put your family on the line, and there are certainly occasions where we came close to losing everything.
Okay, yeah.
Not every decision is a correct decision.
Okay, yeah. And early on, I guess it's higher stakes as well.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Was there a particular... You mentioned Ed Sheeran earlier. Was finding him one of the stats around that time, wasn't it? He came big. Was that a decision which obviously helped catapult you into where you've ended up? Or
Ed is without shadow of a doubt one of our biggest clients, if not the biggest client. Steve Tilley, who promotes him within the office, first saw him supporting Just Jack at Shepherd's Bush Empire. We only sold 1,200 tickets that night. We lost £3,500. It was the best £3,500 we've ever lost. Cause it was also the first night that we saw Ed.
Yeah.
And then we've subsequently gone on and had a relationship with him and Stuart Camp, who also saw Ed that night for the first time. Stuart was the manager for Just Jack.
I see. Was there... Because Ed Sheeran's an interesting one, isn't it? Because you hear, I've heard him speaking before about how he was told repeatedly there's no market for him, he's not going to make it. Did you recognise that there was something there, or
we weren't aware of Ed in his journey to that point, but seeing him sing and play that night, it was very obvious that he had huge talent. And it's about being seen and putting yourself in the place to then be seen by people that then ultimately become your team. And so Stuart saw him that night. The following week, I think Steve and Stuart went to see him at Hoxton Bar and Grill. And the number of people that there was in the teens rather than the hundreds.
Yeah.
And then, as they say, the rest is history.
Yeah, that's great. And in terms of reaching the scales that you did, do you think festivals played a big role in that, or are they a bigger risk than sort of individual gigs and artists?
I think festivals play a key role in the in the music business ecosystem. Their relevance and their risk ebbs and flows as you go through the various years and decades. And in the course of my career, you mentioned Monsters of Rock, which I was involved in from 1984 through to 1996. Then off the back of that rock history at Donington, we ran a couple of Ozfests there. We created Sonosphere. And then while I was at Live Nation, we also started Wireless Festival. And then when we started Kilimanjaro, we then developed Sonosphere as a touring rock festival, which was on a pan-European basis. But festivals have a place within music that currently I'd say is harder to fulfill than it has been in previous years. The cost overhead of running festivals has gone up. There are many more venues now where customers potentially want to go and see a headline act. So if you want to see your favorite headliner, then perhaps you want to go and sit in a stadium or an arena and see them in the comfort of a seat, know where you park. You don't want to get rained on, you don't want to get muddy, and you perhaps do not want the camping experience. So I think that there's room for both, but festivals are also suffering at the moment from an inflation on talent costs, which is being driven by the fact that many of those artists can now make more money headlining and playing their own shows, whether it be at an arena level or at a stadium level.
It feels like a festival would be quite a stressful thing to put on. What's the most stressful event of your career that you've put on?
Short notice projects are hard work. They lead to stress, they lead to long hours. Live 8 in Hyde Park was conceived and put together in less than 2 months.
Okay.
It was part of a series of shows that we were running in Hyde Park that summer. We had an existing infrastructure and an existing setup in there, but nonetheless, putting that scale of show on and the complexity of that certainly presented challenges. And on the day, we ran enormously late. And that was probably one of the more stressful days of my 40 years.
That must have been chaos.
It was organized chaos.
Yeah.
Late running organized chaos.
And if you look back on your career, we have covered this a little bit, but what are you proudest of in your time from Leeds to now? What stands out for you?
I think I'm proud that I'm proud of a whole variety of things in terms of it's not just scale and success. It can be a show or a tour or a concept that you put on sale and it doesn't work, and you and your staff and your team then work really, really hard to dig it out, turn it around, and make it either a success or an acceptable loss as opposed to a catastrophic loss. And so there can be occasions where you're standing there on the night and going, isn't it amazing we've only lost X, which it can be a big number, but that in itself is something to be proud of because it could have been X times five. You'll notice I didn't put a scale to those. But also I think now we, as I mentioned earlier on, that there are many projects now that we produce rather than we promote. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is the difference between producing and promoting is that when you promote, you're effectively buying somebody else's product. A band has decided what they're doing on stage. They create it. And your job is to then just market it and sell the tickets. So you're a promoter.
Yeah.
In the world of theatre or spoken word or family entertainment now, we produce a lot more. Right. And we're there from the very first conversation about, we've got this idea, what should we, how do you think we could actually deliver this on stage? And this isn't necessarily just with music product, but spoken word or theatre in particular. Musical theatre is really complicated. You take so many different elements and it takes so long. With a band, the band records an album, they release it, you go out on tour, the whole cycle can be done in a year. Mm-hmm. I have some musical theatre projects we've been working on for 8 years and we still aren't on stage. Okay. And it'll still take another couple of years for them to get to that point.
So. Wow, okay, yeah. And just finally, often we'll have students listening to our podcast. So there might be students looking to get involved in the music industry, and obviously the route you had in seemed a little bit clearer than perhaps what it is now. What advice would you have for anyone looking to get into the industry nowadays?
Just follow your passion. If you will excel at something if you love doing it. Mm. If you don't like music, if you don't have a buzz on that organizational side, if you don't go home from your day saying, I really, really enjoyed that, then you're probably still looking. Mm-hmm. You have to be passionate about what you're going to do if you're going to be successful at it.
You mentioned earlier on you're in Leeds for a gig tonight. Who are you seeing tonight?
I'm actually in Leeds because this evening we have Gorillaz playing in Bradford. We're playing two small shows I think it's 4,000 capacity.
Okay.
At Bradford Live, which is a newly renovated cinema. And they are shows to bed the band in on a live performance basis before we start on our arena tour next weekend, where we're playing. We start with two nights at Co-op Live, where we play to 38,000 tickets.
Oh, my.
And then that culminates in a show at Tottenham Hotspur in July.
Oh, great. Okay. And what will your role be tonight? Will you just be watching or...?
Just there. My personal role on that show has done, which is that the team have now taken it on. We're running the show with and in conjunction with the artist team. Mm-hmm. My role was to book the venue, cost it, sell the tickets.
Okay, very nice. Brilliant. Well, thanks so much for taking the time out to speak to us, Stuart. And I hope you've enjoyed revisiting campus, and hopefully it's brought back some very happy memories from your time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've enjoyed talking to you, and I'm looking forward to having a quick wander around the refectory to look at the gig list and have some memory lane trips.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Leeds Voices. It was presented, edited, and produced by me, Ed Newbold. Leeds Voices is brought to you by the advancement team at the University of Leeds. Follow us on social media at Leeds Alumni or email us alumni@leeds.ac.uk.